He teases me with soft touches, and when he brushes his thumb against a particularly sensitive spot, I all but jump off the table. Haman, I gasp, what?
So responsive.
He murmurs softly, his eyes almost black.
Gods, Lizzie, you're so beautiful, so fucking sensual.
Raking my teeth over my bottom lip, I peer at him from beneath my lashes as he continues to touch me there, caressing me softly as he watches every play of emotion on my face.
So wet for me.
He rasps as he brings one finger to my entrance, pushing it inside.
Fuck, you're going to be the death of me, Lizzie mine.
Big words for an immortal. I giggle, but I barely manage to get the words out as he pushes another thick finger inside of me, stretching me. There's a slight burning sensation, but it's all drowned out by the richness of feeling and the buzzing thrill. His thumb is circling my sensitive spot while he thrusts his fingers in and out of me. Haman, I breathe out. What are you doing to me?
I'm giving you what you asked for, love. I'm touching you, petting you.
He says, just as he increases the speed, applying more pressure to my bundle of nerves. Just as I feel something mount inside of me, he stops. Haman! I call out, confused and unfulfilled.
Shh, my darling girl.
He coos, and I feel his hot breath against my wetness.
Let me take care of you.
A shiver goes down my back. He can't possibly mean to. But he does. God, he does. My back hits the table as he throws my legs over his broad shoulders, his tongue making contact with my core. He gives me a long lick, covering that entire sensitive area with the flat of his tongue.
Such a bad girl, Lizzie mine, taunting me with this naughty little cunt.
He speaks against me, languidly licking me until I am a thrashing mess in his hold, gasping, moaning, whining, anything to get him to continue this sweet torment.
This naughty little cunt that begs to be claimed, isn't that right? It needs to be marked and owned.
Yes, I moan out loud. Please. His fingers are back at my entrance, stretching me anew as he pumps them in and out, while his lips are wrapped around my bundle of nerves, sucking and nibbling and driving me absolutely insane. Every little touch, every little brush of his tongue against me has me tense up, anticipation building inside of me, as I know this time I'll find that elusive peak.
So deliciously wet and sweet for me.
He murmurs.
So mine, only ever mine.
Yours, I chant incoherently. I'm your Lizzie, just like you're my Haman, my everything, I cry out as my muscles strain with this kiss of pleasure. Something pulsates inside of me, the pressure mounting higher and higher until it reaches that ineffable pinnacle. I fall apart, seemingly breaking into a million pieces as I chant his name again and again, the tone alternating between a loving caress and a worshipped whisper. My Amen. I barely find my breath as I raise myself on my elbows to look at him. He's holding himself still, tension radiating from him. His muscles are taut, the veins on his arms even more prominent than before. Hunger still gnaws at me as I let my gaze roam over him, especially as my eyes move from his solid chest that moves with every laboured breath lower to the hardness that dents the material of his trousers. I may not know much about this love-making business, but I'm quite certain that is for me, meant to go inside me. Slowly biting my lip as I hold his gaze, I slide myself to the edge of the table, my hands trailing over his hard chest as I feel his muscles coil under my touch. "You're so strong," I murmur appreciatively. He's so big compared to me. He could crush me in 1 second, and I know that's what he is afraid of. Yet, because he could, I trust him even more not to. Because I can see in his gaze what I mean to him. All the love, tenderness, and possession. Despite everything, I trust him implicitly. With my heart and my body. I move my hands lower, and his eyes flash dangerously as he senses the direction.
Lizzie.
He gives me a rumbling warning. My hands hover over his hardness, slowly tracing the outline of it, and it's quite massive, certainly more than I would have thought.
Lizzie.
He groans as he covers my hands with his, stopping my advance. "I want to see," I whisper as I search his gaze. "Show me, Eamon. Show me everything."
Fuck, Lizzie. You're really killing me here.
"This is because of me, isn't it?" I murmur softly as I cup him through his trousers.
"Of course."
He groans at my touch.
"Only for you, my love. Only for you."
He says harshly, his nostrils flared as he exhales sharply. Are you in pain?" I ask worriedly as I lighten my hold. He shakes his head. "Show me," I coax again. He bites back a curse as he takes a step back. Just as I think he's going to deny me, I see his hands go to the fastening of his trousers.
"You want to touch me, sweetness. You want to put your hands on my cock."
My eyes widen briefly as I continue to nibble at my lip, anticipation and desire mingling inside of me. "Is that what it's called?" I ask curiously. He grunts. "Cock," I repeat, tasting the word on my lips and finding that I don't mind it. Not at all. "Let me touch you, Eamon. Let me touch your cock," I say eagerly.
"Fuck me, Lizzie mine,"
he groans out loud.
"Say that one more time, and you won't need to touch me at all."
My brows scrunch in confusion, but it's all quickly forgotten as he places my hands on his hardness. Full of curiosity, I reach inside his trousers. Warm flesh greets me, so hot and silky I can't help the gasp that escapes me. Slowly, I take him out, my eyes widening when I see the entire extent of him. God, but how is that supposed to fit inside of me? It must be the size of my forearm, the thickness even more daunting as I can barely fit both hands around him. Angry veins run along the entire length, the thick head at the end leaking some clear liquid the more I handle it. Yet, that's not even the most alarming feature. There's a thick silver ring at the end of it, intertwined through his flesh, in what I can only imagine had been a painful experience. What is this? I tentatively touch the ring as I bring my eyes to his. His hand is on my cheek as he caresses me softly, looking at me almost reverently.
"That is a symbol of my commitment to one woman for eternity. In my culture, Mated males get it after they find the woman they want to be with forever.
My breath hitches at his explanation. Me, I whisper, barely daring to ask out loud.
Only you.
He confirms, his tone firm and unyielding. Pure joy bursts inside of me, my chest contracting with the power of my feelings for him. This is for me, I repeat numbly, bringing my eyes back to his cock, his jeweled cock. All for me. That he would risk pain to do something like this, to prove his commitment, is beyond what I would have ever expected. And that makes me want to please him all the more, give him the same pleasure he's given me. Show me how to touch you. He gives me a curt nod, just as he shows me how to stroke him, moving my hands up and down his shaft, while giving special attention to the thick head at the end.
Spit in your palm, love.
He commands, and I do. I spit into both my palms before I bring them back to his length, lathering the wetness all over the soft yet steely surface of his skin. I massage his flesh slowly, doing my best to cover his entire shaft before I reach the head. I carefully flick my thumb over it, taking some of his arousal and playing with it, yet I'm startled to see that the metal ring moves, too. A low hiss escapes him, but I don't think it's one of pain, not with how his eyes change color again, the light blue becoming darker and darker until it's fully black, the color of his desire. I add moisture as I touch him, tentatively at first, before gaining more speed as I watch for his cues. The way his lips part, his breath coming in short spurts when I massage the head of his cock. My eyes on his face, I see all the sensations echo in his features. The tension, the relief, the desire.
Damn it all to hell, Lizzie.
He releases a tortured cry as I start working him faster and faster.
Just like that. Fuck, put your hands on my cock. I didn't thank you.
He mumbles incoherently. His hands rest on either side of me on the table as he leans into me and my touch, his warm breath fanning my face as I continue to stroke him, delighting in every little sound that escapes his lips. Yet it's when a loud snap erupts in the air that he wrenches himself from me, his breathing hard, his eyes wild as he focuses on the spot next to me, the fissure that appeared in the wood. Dear God, he nearly broke the table.
I can't.
He shakes his head, a look of pure disappointment flashing across his face. No, no, please don't, I whisper, hating to see him so far away, so forlorn. Please, Eamon, let me.
I can't risk it.
He releases an anguished sigh.
Damn it, Lizzie. Damn it.
He curses in frustration. There must be a way. Please. I need you, Eamon. I need you. I'm close to begging him, and if I have to do it, I will. Anything for him to come back to me. He must read my mind, because a defeated look descends upon his features.
How can I deny you anything, Lizzie mine?
He murmurs, as he slowly comes closer. I watch him with trepidation and the precariousness of the moment. I want him too much to think coherently. I only know that I can't stand another moment with him so far from me, without his hands on my flesh, or mine on his. I've never known greater torment than this unleashed passion that's revealed itself within me, all for him. There's such depth of feeling, of want and desire, that I feel like I will physically wither away if I don't act on it. He's a few inches away, miles still, but as he closes his eyes, he materializes, gleaming metal around him. The chains swirl around his torso until his arms are fully trapped.
You'll have to help me take them off later.
He chuckles a moment later. What?
Rhodium chains. They will ensure I don't accidentally hurt you.
He gives me a sad smile, explaining how to take them off at the end. I can tell how much it's costing him to do this. He's so used to being in control, yet for me, he's willing to give it up. To make me happy. To please me. I love you, Eamon. The words flow out of my mouth. I love you and everything that you are, I confess. His eyes widen, disbelief crossing his features before an eerie calm settles over him, an unusual certainty that shifts the currents of the air surrounding us with its strength.
I love you so damn much, Lizzie. You have no idea just how much.
He rasps, just as he steps between my open legs.
I'm yours, sweetness. Yours to do as you please.
Wetting my lips, I give him a nod. Kiss me, I whisper, as my hands reach for his cock, resuming my previous ministrations. Though he is still slightly hesitant, he leans in, softly touching his lips to mine. Once, twice, on the third time, a groan escapes him as he gives himself fully to the kiss, plundering my mouth with his tongue and laying small, claiming bites all around my lips. I increase the rhythm of my strokes, his cock twitching in my hold as he nears his climax. My own core grows wetter and wetter from his proximity, my muscles tensing with desire and a need to be possessed by him, to be fully his. I need you, Eamon, I murmur against his lips. I want to feel you. He draws back just enough to gaze at me. I topple all my mental defenses as I beckon him to look inside my mind and see everything he makes me feel, the absolute inferno that burns in my veins because of him. From the first moment I'd seen him, he'd opened something within me. I may not have known what it meant at the time, but I do now. An all-encompassing need to belong to him, to be one with him. I need you, inside of me, I whisper, blinking in fear as I may have pushed too far. His control is already tenuous as it is, the chains only doing so much to keep him from taking over. And though I know he's doing all this for my benefit, I can't help but yearn for more, regardless of the consequences. Just a little. Enough so I can feel you for a second, I continue, when I see the mix of pain and arousal on his face. He wants this as much as I do, maybe more. Yet beyond the desire, there is the need to protect me, even if that means denying himself. Please. Breathing hard, he takes a moment to look at me. His eyes are wholly black, and they seem to bore into me with the power of their perusal.
Just a little.
He repeats on a ragged breath, almost as if he's trying to convince himself of it.
Just the tip, Lizzie mine.
He rasps as a dangerous gleam enters his eyes.
I'll tell you what to do, and you do it for me.
He murmurs seductively. I nod effusively. Leaning in, I lick his lips as I search for access to his mouth, all the while scooting to the very edge of the table and wrapping my legs around him.
That's it. Now take my cock and bring it to that sweet wonder that hides between your legs.
I maneuver his cock right at my core, a gasp escaping me as I feel the cold metal of his ring slide between my folds.
Fuck yes, Lizzie mine. That's it. Rub me against that rosy cunt of yours and lather me in that sweet honey.
He growls against my lips. I can only comply, the sounds of pure male pleasure echoing in my ears the more I rub him against me.
Push my cock ring against your little nub.
He commands, and I acquiesce, moving the metal-covered head against that sensitive spot. A low moan escapes me.
Just like that, sweet thing. Just like that.
He groans, his pelvis tilting in small but punctuated thrusts. The combination of hard metal and silky skin is maddening against me. The friction delicious as he drives forward before drawing back. In no time, I'm tensing all over, my eyes rolling to the back of my head as my muscles tighten with the power of my release, so much so that I lodge my nails into his arms, holding on to him as the climax cascades through me.
So beautiful.
Eamon whispers.
So fucking beautiful. And mine. My love. My lover. My other half.
He speaks huskily in my hair.
Now slide me to your entrance.
He continues.
Let me feel your tight little cunt squeeze the life out of me, Lizzie.
As if hypnotized by his voice, I can only comply, sneaking one hand between our bodies to grasp his cock and move it lower to my entrance. I instinctively know it's going to hurt. It can't be otherwise with his monstrous size. Yet I want that pain more than anything for it to make this real. His possession. Nudging the head of his cock against me, I slowly push it in. The ring makes it inside me first, the texture of the metal making me release a small gasp. Just that small jewelry, and it's already a tight fit. Not one to be deterred, I wrap my hand as best as I can around his shaft, and I push him into me at the same time as I cant my hips, the double action helping him breach me successfully. A loud pop erupts in the air at the same time as a searing pain radiates from my entrance.
Fuck, Lizzie. Fucking hell.
He rasps loudly, the chains rattling around him as his entire body vibrates with pure strength. For one second, I think he's going to break free of them and have his way with me. But despite all my hopes, they seem to hold. My God, Eamon. I whisper in awe as I rotate my hips to find a more comfortable position. He's mine, just as I am his. Good Lord, he's inside me. Well, maybe just half an inch, but the stretch is unmistakable, as is the burn. You're so big, I breathe out. So...
Are you okay?
He asks suddenly, his voice tinged with worry. It hurts a little, but I'm fine. I feel glorious. He chuckles against me, a deep rumble that makes my insides tingle.
I never dared to imagine this would happen.
He whispers softly.
Not this soon. Not when I'm still a danger to you.
As he speaks, I realize that he feels the same all-encompassing awe I do, the same endless love that pulsates between us. The head of his cock throbs inside me, the ring bumping against my inner walls with every little move and making me jerk in pure pleasure. Though only barely, we are united, and that in itself makes my entire being soar with unadulterated pleasure. If this feels like this, then I can't imagine what having him wholly inside me would be like.
No, don't.
He grits his teeth when I continue to undulate my hips in an attempt to draw more of him inside me, despite the renewed pain.
I'm losing control, my love. The chains. I don't know how long they will hold me.
I whip my gaze to his. But... Rhodium! He smirks at me.
It might slow me down, but it's temporary. It's why a puny sword will never fail me.
He tells me confidently. My big and strong protector. I coo at him, nuzzling my face in the crook of his neck.
But that doesn't mean I'm not marking you today, Lizzie mine. I want you dripping with my cum, smelling of me, feeling me everywhere.
He drawls smoothly. Yes, yes, please. I agree wholeheartedly.
Put those hands on me.
He rasps.
Put those soft hands of yours on me and stroke me like before.
He commands me. I use both hands to cup him, keeping his head inside me as I follow his instructions and move them up and down his shaft. Soft groans escape him as the chains rattle more and more.
Fuck.
He moans, dropping his forehead to my shoulder.
Just like that, my darling girl.
His sounds grow increasingly louder. His musky scent invades my nostrils as I feel him like never before. And his cock, God, but it feels like his cock is swelling in size with each pump, each stroke of my hands.
I'm coming,
he roars, and before I realize it, he lodges his teeth deeply in my shoulder, just as the hot liquid of his seed fills me to the brim. My mouth opens on a soundless moan as pain and pleasure mingle together. He sucks on my wound, animalistic sounds escaping him as he laps at my blood. Reaching around, I find the small mechanism of the chains, quickly unscrewing it. They fall to the ground with a thud, leaving him completely free. But just as I think he's going to continue, claim me fully, he draws back. Blood trickles down his chin, his eyes swirling red and black as he regards me with an odd expression on his face.
I'm sorry.
He hangs his head low, fastening his pants back on. No, I shake my head. I'm not. Please, Eamon, you didn't hurt me, I whisper, holding my hand out to him and urging him to come near. He's like a savage beast as he takes his first step. Yet as he approaches, his nostrils suddenly flare, his eyes pinned to my shoulder before moving lower. Slowly, he tentatively moves in front of me, bringing his lips to my wound and licking it clean. I smile at him, and the tenderness I note in his eyes, just as I see the guilt. I liked it, I confess. I like the pain and the feel of your mouth on me. His nose wrinkles some more, and it's as though he doesn't even hear me as he pushes me back on the table, pinning my dress above my hips as he regards me with a crazed look on his face. Eamon, I call his name, but he doesn't reply. He trails his nose down my body until he reaches between my legs.
I made you bleed,
he suddenly says.
Again?
No, you... I don't get to speak, though, as his tongue connects with my slit, licking me clean. He laps at me for what feels like an eternity, and as two more orgasms rack my body, I find myself too spent to protest when he finally gathers me in his arms, flashing us back to the bedroom.
This should never have happened, Lizzie mine. I was too impatient.
He murmurs in my ear as he gently places me on the bed. No. I hold him to me. This should have happened. I don't regret anything, Eamon. I'm yours, and you are mine. Don't tell me you regret that, I ask, a tinge of hurt in my voice. He shakes his head vigorously.
Never,
he states resolutely.
But you're hurt. I hurt you.
I wanted you to do it, and I loved every moment of it, just like I love you.
Lizzie.
An anguished cry makes it past his lips as he hugs my waist, laying his head over my heart and holding me tight.
I'll make this right. Soon, I'll make this right.
He promises, and I know he will. The following day, I wake up in my own bed with Eamon nowhere to be seen. As promised, we only had one night together, but many more to come. As Mary comes to tend to me, I ask her to run me a hot bath before starting the day. I am still sore between my legs, despite the fact that I took so little of him inside of me. But seeing how he'd fretted about me afterwards, my guess is that he broke my maidenhead, which is why it had been both painful and a little bloody. Yet how could he expect anything less with his frightening size? I wonder if human males are similar in that regard. Yet somehow I doubt it. Everything about Eamon is in the superlative. I don't think anyone in the world could measure up to him. But again, I may be a little biased on the subject. For the next hour, I lounge in the hot bath, enjoying the many fragranced oils Mary adds to my water. Yet as she helps me dress, she informs me that my mother wants to see me in her office. That in itself would sound ominous, considering what I'd overheard yesterday. But I trust Eamon implicitly. So when my mother gives me the dreaded words, "I found you a husband," the only thing I feel is anticipation for the future. For my mother's sake, though, and to maintain our cover, I pretend to be entirely surprised.
"His name is Jeremiah Creed. He's an American industrialist. He may not have a title, but he wishes to relocate his home with you. I've had him checked, and his credentials are sound, as is his fortune and his morals. He's everything I would have wished for you."
"And I don't get a say," I mumble dryly.
"Of course not."
She gives me a tight smile.
"I know best for you, dear. He will call on you in..."
She pauses as she glances at the mantel clock.
"1 hour. Please do make an effort. This is your only chance to escape that... demon."
She grits her teeth, unable to even say his name out loud. I mumble something before I make my exit, going to my room and waiting for the so-called meeting. No matter how much my mother may love me, and I do believe she does, she is also entirely too invested in her coven. Unfortunately for me, not only am I the second born, but I also have my powers bound, which means that aside from the curious mark on my chest, I won't serve for much in her world. As such, as long as she thinks I am safe on the other side of the ocean, I know she will not bother me again. Mary helps me prepare to receive Mr. Creed, and all the while I cannot help but be curious about what Eamon had in mind. Just who would he send to play the role of this Mr. Creed? When the hour comes, I go to the drawing room to meet my intended.
"Elizabeth, come,"
my mother exclaims.
"Just in time. This is Mr. Creed."
"A pleasure to meet you, my lady,"
he drawls, the bass reverberating through my entire being. My lips tip up in a polite smile. "A pleasure to make your acquaintance, Mr. Creed." Our gazes meet, holding, arresting. Oh, the rogue! I don't know how he managed such a ruse, but he looks like another person. Dark hair, dark eyes, everything about him is different. Everything but the essence, and the voice that I would recognize anywhere.
"Why don't you sit there with Mr. Creed and talk?"
My mother is quick to steer us to the sofa, telling us to take our time getting to know each other while she moves to the other end of the room to give us some privacy. I maintain my pleasant smile as I gaze at him, studying him. Despite looking so different, he isn't in any way less striking.
In fact, my attraction to him goes beyond looks. It's something at a more primal level. It's his mere presence, his essence that intoxicates me. You're crafty, I'll give you that, I murmur in a low voice.
And you're not too sore, I hope.
I shake my head lightly. How can no one tell? How did you even do this?
I can change my eye color at will,
he says, just as he does a brief demonstration.
My natural color is light, but my mood often influences the shifts.
And the rest?
I can slightly alter my physical appearance so I won't be recognized, but the rest is here.
He taps his forehead. You're using your mind tricks, aren't you? A quick nod.
I won't be able to stay long because of that, though I changed my appearance a great deal. It's the mind glamour that gives the impression I'm a completely different person. I didn't want to risk anything with your mother in case she might find some familiarity.
You can do it with more people at once, I ask in wonder.
Not for long, though. It depletes a lot of my strength to control that many people. It's even worse because your mother has strong mental barriers, so it's almost double the effort to trick her.
I see. I purse my lips. I appreciate what you're doing for me, I whisper, wishing I could reach out to touch him.
I'd do anything. This is but a small price to pay for knowing you will be mine, and that we will be together, away from this place.
My lips pull in a loving smile. You're quite the charmer, Mr. Creed, I speak out loud, feigning a giggle as I draw back. My mother peeks over at us, nodding approvingly. Eamon takes my cue and engages in a monotone conversation to suit the circumstances. Unfortunately, soon it's time for him to leave. The visits continue for a month, after which Mr. Creed makes his formal proposal, and I, ever the dutiful daughter, accept. The banns are soon read, and the following month we are both wedded and ready to depart for the colonies.
I can't believe this is happening!
My mother cries after the wedding, giving me a tight hug.
You know I love you, and I want what's best for you. You know that, don't you?
I nod. I know. And I will be happy. I happen to like Mr. Creed, and I am sure we will be happy together. She sniffles at my statement.
You know, if your courtship hadn't worked out, I would have never forced you to marry him.
You wouldn't have? My brows shoot up in surprise. She shakes her head.
I wanted you married, but I would have never forced you to accept someone you were bored. I know how my marriage with your father went, and I'd never want that for you.
Thank you for telling me, I say as I kiss her cheeks. We may see each other again in the future.
Anytime you need something, I'm one missive away.
We hug some more, and I help her wipe her tears before we say our goodbyes. Next, I say farewell to my sister and my brother, and I'm finally ready to leave.
Please take care of my daughter,
my mother tells Mr. Creed, giving him a warm hug. Ah, but if she only knew she was hugging the exact demon she'd sworn to eradicate. To keep up appearances, we embark on the vessel headed for the colonies. But as soon as the ship takes off, Eamon gives me his signature smile, and taking me in his arms, he transports us directly to the manor he'd built for me.
Welcome home, my bride.
He drawls, as he presents me with the entire grandiosity of the place. Up on the hill, it's far enough from the village to give us all the privacy we need.
I now have a surprise for you,
he tells me, as he leads me to our suite. The bedroom is just as I remember it, but as Eamon shows me around, I realize there's more I didn't get to see last time. Two double doors lead to a small balcony, and Eamon invites me to step inside. What?
I trail off as I see the wonder around me. The balcony protrudes from the building, and looking down, I note that the hill turns into a rocky cliff before it meets the ocean. Up here as we are, it feels as though we're right above the shore, over the water.
I knew you would love this,
he says tenderly as he fits his front to my back, cupping my midriff and hugging me close to him. It's such a wonderful view.
Doesn't it remind you of something?
He inquires softly, laying his chin on my shoulder. I don't reply immediately as I stare at the picturesque scenery, something about it tugging at my heartstrings. I don't know, I whisper. There is a certain melancholy, despite the beauty of it, but I do not know why. I feel him smile against me.
I have something for you.
He draws back, but before I can protest his absence, he places something around my neck. What? I bring my hand up to touch the necklace, feeling the smooth stone. A current of electricity goes through my body, jerking me back. Amen. What?
It's time you learned the truth, my love. It's time you learned how it all started.
What started? I frown, suddenly overwhelmed by a mountain of sensation.
Us.
A simple word, but a complicated history.
Chapter 20. October 1955, Fairydale, Massachusetts. Sweat clings to my skin as I open my eyes, wildly looking around. The unfortunate realization that it was all a dream crashes on me, while my frustration mounts that it couldn't last a while longer. What was Eamon talking about? I remember most of the details of the dream before he showed me the balcony, yet I can't recall anything of what he told me after, and something tells me it was very important. My hands go to my neck, feeling for the missing necklace. I hadn't gotten a good look at it, but for some reason, I feel its absence to my very soul. The moment it had touched my skin, I'd felt more complete than ever before. I sigh as I rub my eyes in an attempt to chase sleep and disappointment away. My limbs are sluggish as I get out of bed, and I'm barely able to stand on 2 feet. Yet, as I glance at my wristwatch, I note it's 3 o'clock at night. I'm alone in my room, with Caleb nowhere to be seen. If before I would have been upset at his absence, now I don't know anymore. Certainly not with this last dream and what I'd learned about Eamon. I swallow hard, certainty washing over me the more I think about the past. Eamon would have never hurt me. I am absolutely sure of it, more than I've ever been about anything in my life, so much so that I can't conceive of ever believing Rhiannon's lies. He loved me. He loves me. And I love him. How vile do you have to be to lie to someone about something as severe as rape? To show them what would look like their own abuse and murder? How evil do you have to be to do that just to push your own agenda? Ironic how everyone blames Eamon for being so evil, but at every turn, I'm getting more and more convinced everyone else but him is evil. Eamon would never do anything unprovoked, and I remain staunch in that opinion. I may have wavered for a moment, and I deeply regret that, but at least that showed me that Rhiannon isn't as saintly as she makes herself to be. Perhaps none of the Hales are. Crashing on the edge of the bed, I blink back tears as I recall all those perfect moments and the utmost care he had for me. He chained himself with a harmful metal to please me, even knowing he would be at my mercy while doing so. Goodness, but he was absolutely wrecked when he saw he'd made me bleed just a little.
That Aemon would never do anything to hurt me, physically or emotionally. For God's sake, the man plotted an entire elaborate scheme to marry me just so our relationship wouldn't cause a bloody conflict, so he wouldn't hurt my family. He'd built me a castle a continent away, dedicating every little architectural quirk to me. Someone like that would never, never do anything against me. And that complicates everything in my life. With me, with Caleb, with what Rhiannon and Mr. Nicholson mean to do to harm Aemon. Conflicting thoughts arise in my head until I can no longer make sense of my own mind. I no longer know what to do or whom to trust. I only know that I am in love with a demon, and I must do whatever I can to ensure that he walks free. Swiftly getting dressed, I open the door to my bedroom, glancing around the hallway. Relieved I don't see any sign of movement, I take a candle with me to the other wing on the first floor, the Forbidden Creed matrimonial suite. Creeping my way towards that area, I can't help but think back to the past and how everything had originally looked. Though the Hales have undoubtedly maintained the authentic feel of the house, there are some things that have changed. Yet as soon as that thought crosses my mind, I come to a halt just in front of the big double doors. Katrina had told me Lydia Hale was the daughter of the original owners, the Creeds. Dear God, but does that mean that the Hales are my descendants? If Lydia was my daughter in a past life, then that would make me Caleb's great-great-grandmother. What sick twist of fate is this? I shake my head at the absurdity of it all. Surely there must be another explanation. Seeing how nothing is as it seems with this family, I won't despair just yet. Steeling myself, I muster the courage to probe the door. To my surprise, it easily gives way. Not so locked. Pushing my way inside, I come to a narrow corridor. As I wave my candle around, I note the various paintings on the wall. The first three are of people I do not recognize, one girl and two older boys. But it's when I reach the end of the corridor that I stop in my tracks, my eyes slowly widening with disbelief. If I had had any doubt about the veracity of my dreams, then this would have erased all doubts. It's a painting of five people, a family. Elizabeth and Aemon are in the back, looking lovingly at the artist painting the portrait. His arm is across her shoulders as he holds her close to him, scandalous for the period, no doubt. Her head is on his chest, a look of pure happiness on her face. God, but we're identical. I can't help but whisper as I let my eyes roam over her features. The same blue eyes, dark hair, and pale complexion. Taking a step closer, I move the candle higher to study Aemon's features, which are just as beautiful as I remembered. Strong jaw and cheekbones, a lush mouth, and mesmerizing eyes. Then there's the unmistakable strength of his body, his height and breadth of shoulders, impressive and breathtaking. Aemon, I whisper, hovering my fingers over the surface of the painting in the ghost of a touch. My Aemon.
Lizzie.
I startle back, my eyes wide, my breathing punctured as I look around me. Aemon, are you here? My smile dies down when I don't get any reply. It must have been my erratic mind, for I wish for nothing else than to meet him again, tell him I still love him. Against all odds, he still has my heart. Returning my attention to the painting, I see the same three people from before in front of Aemon and Elizabeth. The girl looks about 8 or 10 years old, while the other boys are older, in their late teens. Who are they? Elizabeth had wed Jeremiah Creed in 1791. This painting looks to have been commissioned in 1805, the year of the plague. Could they have had three children in that period? Those
children? More questions arise in my mind, but hopefully I will be able to find some answers. Taking a few more steps, I spot another portrait of Elizabeth and Eamon. There are none with them individually, just the two of them together, always holding each other, always gazing at one another with love. Melancholy settles deep in my soul as I glance at them, at us. I know at once that this is what I've been looking for my entire life, that restlessness that's always lurked beneath my skin, making me dissatisfied with every moment, even the joyful ones. It was because of him. I was missing a crucial part of myself. Him. Forcing myself to move on, I come to a small ambulatory before I walk into a big closet, the same one from my dreams. My breath catches in my throat as I recognize some of the gowns, particularly the red one I'd worn that night for him. Reaching for it, I trail my hands over the worn silk, the material damaged by the passage of time. More memories appear in my mind, the first time it has happened during daytime. Yet as I brush my fingers along the fine fabric, I can envision all the occasions I'd worn it on, and every time it had been to please Eamon. We'd made love countless times while I was wearing this gown, every time the passion between us burning brighter. Eamon. I sniffle a cry as tears stream down my cheeks. I miss you. I need you, I whisper. But there's no reply. Turning, I come face to face with the wall of jewelry, where there are even more pieces than in my dream. Picking up a small red box, I barely open it, and I'm thrust into the past. You got me another pair of earrings. Eamon, I already have more than enough. I'd admonished him softly, gazing at him with tenderness.
You love jewelry, Lizzie mine, and I love gifting it to you. Do you begrudge me this small pleasure?
Of course not. Never. Thank you. I'd leaned into him, giving him a kiss and allowing him to put the earrings on. Back to the present, I can't help but audibly sob at the beautiful earpieces. Without even thinking whether I should or not, I pluck them from their box, putting them on. The only way I can feel closer to Eamon at a time such as this. Yet as I search through the various boxes of jewelry, I can't find the necklace he'd given me after our wedding anywhere. Odd. That is the one piece I wish I could get my hands on, not only because of its symbolism to our relationship, but also because I'd felt something when it had touched my skin. A strong current of electricity had entered my body, the necklace acting like some sort of armor around my skin. Somehow I force myself to move forward, even though my heart yearns for that one piece. Maybe I'll find it in another place. As I open another set of double doors, I come to a small living area that leads into the main bedroom. The matrimonial bedroom seems to take up the space of the entire wing, but it's not just the sheer size of it that is striking, but also the design. Though everything is dusty since no one has been in here in decades, if not more, everything is as we'd left it. I don't know how I am sure of it, but as I take in the design, the furniture and the items lying around, I get a strong sense of déjà vu. Everything is a combination of red and gold, the walls, the furniture, even the bed. Drawn to the bed, I reach down to touch the red covers, images dancing in my brain, of us, together, wrapped in each other as we made love. I see flashes of our temporary happiness, when it had been just us, Eamon and Lizzie, husband and wife, lovers. My throat feels ragged as I cannot stop myself from crying at what I've seemingly lost. Who did this to us, Eamon? I murmur between sobs. Who destroyed our happiness?
Most of all, who killed me? If Aemon didn't do it, then who did? Wandering around the room, I touch every little thing as I get more snippets of the past. Yet it's nothing concrete. I see bursts of happiness, but I don't see a coherent or linear narrative. And now, that is what I need the most to make sense of things. Next to the bed, there's a brown wooden chest that I slowly open, coughing when the dust flies into my face. Rubbing my hands with the material of my blouse, I peer inside. No, I whisper as I reach down inside. It can't be. Yet it is. There are tens, if not hundreds of letters in the trunk, all in a decidedly masculine writing. The letters I'd received from Aemon. They are all here. Settling on the floor, I place the candle next to me in a secure location before I unfold a couple of them, reading their contents. If before I'd been sobbing, now I can't help but wail as I read those precious words. Eternally yours, Aemon. The letters are just as I'd seen them in my dreams, once more confirming the veracity of my visions. But it's the intense feeling at seeing them up close, of having them in my own hands, that proves to be my undoing. Aemon! Aemon! I chant his name between uncontrollable sobs. The letters attest to his love and patience, to his care for me. Each word is like manna for a woman on the brink of hopelessness, each word bringing me closer to him and steering me towards the truth. I don't know how much time I spend lost through the letters, but I can't stop myself from unfolding every one of them, poring over his beautiful script as I imagine him sitting at a desk, penning them slowly and carefully. In my mind, I see my beautiful Aemon as he brought his quill to the paper, staining the sheet with ink, just like he'd stained my very essence with his presence. He imprinted on me, just as he imprinted these words on paper, irrevocably, eternally. Light streams through the curtains, particles of dust dancing in the air. Dawn is here, and I'm nowhere near ready to leave this place. Not when it still holds a piece of him. Yet, as I look up towards the source of light, I suddenly remember the balcony. Carefully placing the letters back in the chest and closing it, I blow the candle out and leave it on the floor. Getting up, I slowly make my way to the other end of the room, pulling on the curtains and peering outside. A medium-sized balcony appears before me, sparsely furnished with only two chairs, a small table, and many, many blue flowers that are somehow still alive. My eyes widen at the wonder of it. Wiping a finger down the table, I note the thick layer of dust that coats not only this surface, but every single one on this balcony. There is absolutely no trace of anyone having been here to tend to the flowers in the recent past. Yet, in spite of that, they look perfectly healthy. My brows scrunch in curiosity as I go down to my knees to take a closer look at them. I've always had a fascination with flowers and plants. Unfortunately, save for the books I'd managed to find at the orphanage or at St. Russell, my education has been sorely lacking. Even so, it's impossible not to recognize this one. Anyone would be able to. Forget me not. Given their pristine condition, not one flower is wilted. Someone must have taken religious care of them, and I can only think of one person. Aemon. Somehow he'd kept these flowers alive. Even trapped, he focused his strength on them. I didn't forget you, I whisper, as a tear rolls down my cheek. I can never forget you. Even when I couldn't remember, I knew I was missing something, a central part of myself. How could I forget you when you're part of me? I confess softly, plucking one small flower and placing it in my hair. A little wobbly, I slowly get up and turn towards the big windows at the end of the balcony, the memory from before appearing again in my mind. Placing my hands on the windowsill, I lean forward to watch the breathtaking scenery, made even more so by the slow ascent of the sun into the sky, its orange-like beams bathing me in the purest light. Closing my eyes, I inhale the clean air as I lose myself in the moment, in this place that bears the dearest memory of our wedding. An eerie calm, unlike any I've ever experienced before, settles over me, reaching deep inside of me and touching my soul. Feather-like touches caress my cheeks, just as the warmth of the young sun rays cascades over me. I remain like that, hanging on to the windowsill while freeing my mind and letting it roam, all in an effort to draw more visions of the past. I want, need, to see more of Eamon, of our past together, of that past happiness. So I open myself up like never before, somehow knowing I will be safe on the other side. Tipping my head up, I lean forward onto the railing. The sound of the ocean becomes increasingly louder, the water hitting against the rocky shore, before retreating, a perpetual movement. Seagulls squawk in the distance, the combination of early morning noises washing over me. Yet just as I find myself firmly planted in the present, I'm suddenly thrust forward into another time. The view is a similar one, a balcony on the edge of a rocky cliff overlooking the ocean. But I can tell immediately that this is an entirely different place. Turning, I note the change in furniture and the fact that this balcony is far smaller, only accommodating two people with almost no wiggle room. Taking a step forward into the adjacent room, I'm surprised to see how sparsely furnished it is. A bed lies in the middle of the room, and a chest of drawers next to it. At the end of the room, there is one table and one chair, suggesting this is only occupied by one person. My feet take me inside, but I don't stop in the room. Opening the door, I follow a small corridor before I go down a spiral staircase. Everything is small and secluded, the living quarters away from everyone else. As I reach the bottom of the stairs, I look right and left, realizing there are two rooms to the left and glass doors to the right. Full of curiosity, I march to the right, opening the glass doors and stepping into pure sunlight. I instinctively squint my eyes and bring a shielding hand to my forehead. My eyes get teary from the direct contact with the light, but as they slowly accommodate to it, I manage to take in my surroundings. It's an indoor garden, a glorious garden. It's the size of an entire yard, the only difference being that it is walled on every side, the light coming through a glass ceiling at the top. There are rows upon rows of flowers and plants, many of them medicinal. Yet my eyes take me to the top right corner, where I spot the beautiful blue hue of the flowers, forget-me-nots. I squat down in front of them, bringing my hand to touch their silky texture. The questions continue to assail my mind, though I am seeing a foreign sight, one which I am sure belongs to my memories. I cannot for the life of me remember what this all meant. Where am I? What is this place? And why is it so solitary? Taking out a handkerchief, I pat down each flower, the action foreign. That is when I realize that despite maintaining my own awareness, it is not I who is performing this task, who is moving about the garden. I am merely a spectator in this body, watching things that have already occurred in the past. I carefully tend each flower, making sure they are all clean, healthy, and well-watered. Yet, as I lose myself in this menial task, a sudden creaking sound startles me. Jumping to my feet, I bring my hand to my breast, my heart beating wildly in my chest. I cannot say for sure if I am afraid or curious.
Show yourself,
I call out, my voice booming in the enclosed space. Yet again, I'm struck by the accent and the words, immediately aware the tongue is not English, but instinctively knowing its meaning. Slow, thudding steps resound in my ears. Turning towards the entrance I'd come from, my eyes widen as I see an imposing form walking towards me.
You've been taking care of them.
He tips his head towards the flowers, his eyes glinting with pleasure at seeing me again.
A gift should always be treasured,
I reply with a huff, though there is no mistaking the warmth that spreads to my insides at the sight of him.
What are you doing here, Aemon?
I ask softly, my pulse picking up speed just as he picks up his pace, until he's standing right in front of me. He's dressed in formal clothes, black silk and leather mixed in a lethal combination, all tied together with bones, what little must have been left of his greatest adversaries. He looks absolutely dashing, and I cannot seem to tear my eyes from him. There's a quiet pride shining in the tilt of his chin, a deadly aura surrounding him as he walks with such casual leisure, as if he could end the entire world if he wished to.
I'm here for you, lovely Scylla.
He murmurs softly. Before I can reply, though, I'm wrenched back into the present, crouching in pain from the unexpected push. My breath becomes labored, just as my heart slowly breaks as I reach out for Aemon, only to find nothing before me. Aemon, I whisper, my voice tinged with anguish as more tears leak from my eyes. I do not know when that flash was from, just as I do not know where we were. The only thing I do know is that my feelings for him never changed. Then, just like now, I placed in him all my girlish dreams and childhood fantasies. I saw him for what he was, a war machine. But I also knew a side of him the world did not. Aemon D'Artagnan was not just a killer. He was the most tender lover, my lover. Feeling more alone and forlorn than ever, I drop to the ground, hugging my knees to my chest as I rock myself lightly, all the while thinking of him and of this situation that's threatening to make me go insane. What do I do now? How can I help him when I don't have all the information, let alone knowledge of who I am? As the hours grow late, I realize I need to head back to my room to avoid being discovered. The last thing I want is for Rhiannon to know I suspect her and her motives. Yet I cannot ease the turmoil that resides within me. If Aemon cannot tell me anything, it means I need to find everything out for myself, and I fear the only way to do so is to dream more, see more of the past and understand the hidden truths. If I am able to find out who killed me, I may be able to find a solution to this. With my mind made up, I climb back in bed, closing my eyes and forcing myself to sleep.
Do I have to carry you out of bed?
An amused voice whispers in my ear, hours later, when despite my best efforts, sleep has proven elusive. What are you doing here? My eyes snap open as I come face to face with Caleb hovering over me. A lopsided smile pulls at his lips as he regards me, and my heart skips a beat. Yet at the same time, a big chasm opens inside of me as I find myself caught in yet another conundrum. I love Aemon. I love him unlike I ever thought myself capable of loving someone. At the same time, I have to admit to myself that I'm in love with Caleb, too. Against all odds, he's ingratiated himself in my heart with his unwavering support. There is also the fact that I accepted Caleb's proposal, not Aemon's. Why does it feel, then, that I'm betraying Aemon when I am with Caleb? frustration gnaws at me the more I ruminate about this. Yet one thing is absolutely certain. I cannot marry Caleb, nor can I continue a relationship with him. Not with everything I know now. I just need to find the right moment to let him know that, too.
Let's go. I have a special treat for you today.
He winks at me just as he yanks the sheets from my body. All at once, the scene from the night before replays in my mind, and my cheeks heat up in embarrassment. Well, at least this time I'm wearing clothes. You know, women need their beauty sleep, I grumble as I get out of bed and put on a pair of shoes.
If you were more beautiful, Darcy, darling, you'd give me a heart attack,
he says smoothly. You're such a charmer, I say, shaking my head at him, though his words make my insides melt. He doesn't allow me any respite as he takes my hand, leading me out of my room and towards the exit of the house. Despite my previous decision, my body reacts to his nearness, a tingling that starts at the surface of my skin, which then extends everywhere, until my mind is filled entirely with thoughts of him. Is it possible for someone to be attracted to two people the same? Can the same be said about love? Because no matter how much I mull over this issue, or how much I compare Caleb and Eamon, a side of me wants them both. Is it possible to love them both? The moment that thought arises, I chastise myself. How could I be so fickle?
Here,
Caleb suddenly says, startling me from my thoughts. What's this? I blink in confusion.
What do you think, silly? It's a picnic,
he tells me just as he swoops me in his arms, laying me on the spread blanket.
I prepared all your favorite foods and drinks. Since I don't have any business pending today, I wanted to spend the day with my fiancé,
he declares as he leans in to give me a kiss on my cheek. I'm speechless as I'm trying to catch up with everything. Everything is laid out before me perfectly, from food to wine to a couple of books and board games to read and play. He's been entirely too thoughtful, and I, ever the ungrateful, get hung up on one word, fiancé.
Here,
Caleb says, as he places two plates of food in front of me, both boasting a selection of cheeses, ham, and vegetables.
I also got your favorite bread,
he continues as he removes a French baguette from his bag. Taking a knife, he proceeds to cut it into little pieces for me. You're too sweet. I smile at him.
Not enough,
he answers gruffly.
My purpose is to make sure every moment of your day is sweet, regardless of the circumstances.
I raise a brow at him, but I don't get to reply as he holds a morsel of food to my lips. He'd stacked cheese and a slice of salami on a piece of bread, topping it off with some red pepper. Opening my mouth, I let him feed it to me.
You need to take care of your health, darling. You've been slacking off with eating, haven't you?
My cheeks redden from his observation. With so much stress, I might have forgotten to eat a time or two. I eat when I'm hungry, I mumble.
Which is when you remember, and it's not good for you. You've already lost weight.
My eyes widen. It's not polite to comment on a lady's weight, I reproach lightly, trying not to let his comment get to my head. Looking down at my body, I have to wonder if what he says is true. I haven't paid much attention to how my clothes have fit me since I've had other things on my mind. Yet now that he mentioned it, I can't help but wonder if he finds that unappealing. Then I realize that from the beginning, he's been plying me with food at every turn, urging me to try this, try that. Was it all some covert mission to get me to fill up in places? He draws back, blinking in confusion, and it dawns on him that he misspoke. A flush mars his cheeks as he finds himself speechless for a moment.
It wasn't my intention to offend you,
he murmurs, his hand seeking mine and squeezing tight.
I don't care about your weight, Darcy.
I care about you. And that means watching out for you to be healthy, to eat at the right times, and make sure you're taking care of yourself. I know you have a tendency to forget about that when your mind is preoccupied with something.
His tone is laced with so much sincerity as he urges me to meet his gaze. In such a short time, he's observed me quite thoroughly, hasn't he? Always looking out for me, always there to help me if I'm in trouble. Why does that thought alone make my heart beat faster in my chest, my stomach clenching with that familiar sensation? I shouldn't feel like this, yet I do.
I apologize. I truly didn't mean it like that. Trust me.
He reiterates. All right. I nod.
I mean it.
He continues, seemingly making it his mission to convince me. Sliding closer on the blanket, he tugs me to him, his hand trailing down my back as he places my head on his shoulder.
Do you know why I fell in love with you?
He asks softly in my hair. I shake my head.
Your heart.
He tells me, and I can feel him smile against me.
You have the purest soul, darling. I've never met someone more kind-hearted than you. I mean, who would save a damn cat from a fire instead of saving herself?
I freeze. How does he know about that? I haven't told him about it. In fact, he's never even met Mr. Meow. So how would he know about that incident unless he was there? Unless... Goosebumps cover the entirety of my skin as an ominous feeling envelops me. Dear God, but could he have something to do with the fire? He continues speaking, singing my praises, yet I can't listen anymore as doubts cloud my mind. Could he have done that to force me to move to the Hale Manor? He'd certainly been insistent about it before.
So, trust me that it's not your appearance that holds my heart, Darcy. Though, I must say, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
He chuckles, and I force a smile on my lips. Thank you, I murmur. I don't get to say more as a loud crash resounds in the air. Caleb stiffens.
We're still on Hale Land. We should be protected by Rhiannon's wards.
He frowns. We should see what's wrong, I offer, and before he can refuse me, I'm already out of his arms and to my feet, hurrying towards the noise. Anything to avoid the deep discomfort that settled in my stomach at his words. God, but I really hope it's just my paranoia coming to the surface, and Caleb had nothing to do with the fire. But what if he did?
Darcy, wait!
Caleb calls after me.
Don't!
He doesn't get to finish his sentence as I stop in my tracks, shock overtaking me at the sight I'm seeing.
Darcy!
He breathes hard as he catches up with me, taking my hand. But then he looks ahead, too, and notices the same thing. Rhiannon is at the big gate of the estate, and she's opposite Mr. Nicholson. Both are glaring at each other while screaming, and before I know it, a laser beam erupts from Mr. Nicholson's cane, which is directed at Rhiannon.
You damn old man!
She curses before a shield envelops her. Like a mirror, it serves to refract the laser beam, yet it's unfortunate that the direction is... us.
Down!
Caleb yells just as he pushes me to the ground. Even so, the trajectory of the laser is downwards, and as he emits a low, pained groan, I know he got hit.
Oh God! Oh God!
I start panicking, my hands all over his body.
Are you all right? Are you...
I...
His features tense and strain as he squeezes his eyes shut, holding himself over me, his palms on each side of my face as he supports himself on his arms.
You're hurt! God, Caleb!
Don't!
He grits out.
It's just... temporary.
He grinds his teeth as he breathes in and out, doing his best to control himself. Yet as he opens his eyes, I'm struck by the change of color in his irises as they swirl a deep red. Surely not. Surely it's just a play of shadows.
Darcy!
Rhiannon calls my name, followed by Mr. Nicholson as they both reach my side. Caleb is quick to regain control as he rights himself back up before helping me to my feet.
Are you hurt?
She asks, her voice full of worry.
You're not hurt, are you?
Mr. Nicholson addresses the same question. No. I give them a tight smile. I'm fine.
This is all your fault.
She snaps at Mr. Nicholson, her hands gaining an odd yellow hue before she blasts him into a tree. I jump a step up, my eyes wide in shock.
You fucking shrew!
Mr. Nicholson yells. Red stains his white shirt as he rights himself up, a gash forming where his forehead meets his hairline. Yet despite the visible injuries, he is fine. He grips his cane tighter, his entire palm cupping the top of the handle as he rights himself back up. And just like they appeared, his injuries heal under my very gaze. I shoot a concerned look at Caleb, but he slowly shakes his head at me. His lips are pursed, his entire countenance stiff.
You should know by now that you can't hurt me, Rhiannon.
He sneers.
Oh, you might heal, but I'll just keep blasting you. Let's see if you can heal forever.
She smirks at him as her palms color with magic again, energy humming all around.
I just came to see Darcy, not an old and bitter crone like you.
He spits out at her, his eyes full of malice.
And you'll have to get past me to see her.
Rhiannon challenges, placing herself in front of me and channeling the same shield she'd used before.
Bring it on.
He spits out in distaste, and lifting his cane to his chest, he closes his eyes.
Darcy, go inside the house!
Rhiannon yells at me. The sky blackens, bolts of lightning marring the previously clear expanse. I'm rooted to the spot as I just stare at Mr. Nicholson and the energy that swirls around him. His eyes snap open, his irises swirling a combination of white and blue as he blasts that lightning towards Rhiannon. It's at that moment that Caleb takes my hand in his, tugging me towards the house. But...
You don't want to be anywhere near them now.
He says tightly. Reaching the house, he pulls me inside, closing the door. Yet I can't help my curiosity as I go back to the window, watching Rhiannon and Mr. Nicholson fighting from a distance. They seem to be equally matched, with the only difference that Mr. Nicholson can heal while Rhiannon cannot. I didn't know Mr. Nicholson had powers too, I mention absent-mindedly as he continues to wield the lightning in his favor. Caleb grunts, taking his position by my side as he wraps a possessive arm around my shoulders, pulling me into him. But how is it possible? I suddenly frown. If he is my grandfather and... powers are passed down the female line. How is it possible he has them too?
What do you think?
Then my grandmother must have had powers too. Caleb smiles in my hair.
Or maybe she was the only one who did.
He muses quietly. My brows pinch together in concentration as I try to make sense of what he's saying, or rather... what he isn't saying. I continue to watch the ongoing fight, grimacing when Mr. Nicholson is once more thrown to the side by a powerful blast. Yet this time, the impact is so great, his cane slips from his hand, falling onto the grass a few feet away. He struggles to his feet, teetering from side to side. Even from a distance, I can see he has a nasty wound at his temple. But unlike before, now it's not healing immediately, bleeding profusely onto his cheek. He moves slowly, his sights set on his cane as he tries to evade more blasts coming from Rhiannon.
But what is most striking is that not only has the sky suddenly cleared of all the clouds, but Mr. Nicholson is unable to channel any of the previous lightning bolts for his use. The cane, I whisper, realization dawning on me. The cane is the source of his power. Caleb nods.
Look now,
he urges, just as Mr. Nicholson gets his hand on his cane. In no time, the wounds are healing on his body, his strength seemingly reinvigorated. Is the cane a magical artifact? What is it that it can confer so much power to its master?
Is it?
Caleb hums, his eyes steely as he regards Mr. Nicholson. Tipping my head up, I blink in surprise as I see the naked hatred and anger radiating from Caleb, all directed towards Mr. Nicholson. There's so much negative emotion coming from him that it swirls in the air, a bitter taste erupting on my tongue. Somehow, I know this is personal. From the beginning, Caleb has been against him, though he'd never outright told me why. He'd given me hints he disapproves of him, but never with such astounding vehemence. As such, I can only infer one thing. What did he do? I whisper in horror, seeing Caleb as I'd never seen him before. What did he do to you?
He bit the hand that fed him.